This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
It's the Sunday edition of the Busted Open Podcast with Justin Labar. I'm Jonathan Hood, and Justin, on the show today, we got a chance to talk about The Rock. Is he a babyface or is he a heel based on that promo from SmackDown in Memphis?
Yeah, apparently Memphis is the home of The Rock, so he's got to play it up like the hometown hero.
Also, who is worthy of defeating the Intercontinental Champion, Gunther?
I don't think anybody, and I'll tell you why.
All right, and what about On This Day, our brand new segment, On This Day, great events occurred in pro wrestling.
Yes, great events, tons of history to talk about, both in the ring and out of the ring.
It's Jonathan and Justin. It's the Sunday edition of the Busted Open Podcast. Enjoy. I am so excited about this show because we got so much to get to. First, we talk about a concert that we did not expect, an actual rock concert coming from Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, in Memphis, Tennessee. You know, The Rock is a heel in some cities and a babyface in other cities. Memphis, Tennessee, a place where The Rock started in the Jerry Jarrett territory as Flex Cavana. He quoted that Saturday morning show that was so famous with Lance Russell and Dave Brown. And they were there, and they were there, and they were talking about Flex Cavana because they were hyping him up just like anybody else coming through the territory in Memphis during that time. That was a cool moment. I mean, it wasn't forced. It was just cool, and Memphis was all about it.
They were all about it, and Rock gave full context to why Memphis has a place in his heart, why it has significance to his career. It's very cool to shout out the Flex Cavana name. Didn't ever think I'd hear Dwayne Johnson say that on WWE programming. But I got to say, Jay Hood, he could have shut it down after that. And I didn't like the fact that he did not. Mm-hmm. He could have, you know, after he gets his bit of appreciation from the historical roots that Memphis has to his Hall of Fame career, he could have then shut it down. He could have then talked about whatever drug of choice problem Memphis has, or he could have talked, or he could have dissed the Blues, or he could have found some woman and noted her weight was a problem. He could have done any of The Rock's tricks, but he didn't. He allowed them to keep cheering him. He allowed it to be a kind of babyface segment for him, and I don't agree with that, given where we're at in this build to Mania. I don't agree. I had a problem with the fact that he let that ride. I thought he needed to turn heel, turn him heel like he's done on all these other cities, and he didn't.
Or just be what he has been in his return. Correct? Just be who you've been. I find all of this fascinating in how much rope that Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, has for this character. You and I both know, based on The Rock's social media, him attacking Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins and Dave LaGreca and everybody else in between, that this guy has come back to be a part of the bloodline, which are heels. Cool heels, you know, go away, heat, whatever it is, they're supposed to be heels, however you feel about it, because we don't tell you how to fan. But he comes to Memphis and says in this promo, you know, I usually break bad on these cities, but I just can't do it because Memphis is home. Is it really home? Is it home? It's where you got your start. But why? I mean, if any time that you really want to break bad on a city, it's Memphis, Tennessee, where you started. Like, you know, usually in that spot, what do you say, Labar? I'm so glad I left this dump, or something along those lines, right?
He's talking again. I know that he articulated where he trained, Flex. I get it. I know he acknowledged that. If Dwayne's listening right now, I know you acknowledged all that. You did. But if I'm the average fan, this is not The Rock at home. Tell me we're in Miami. Tell me you're home there because you went to the U and you threw up the U. If we're in Hawaii, tell me you're home there because it's an island and it's got a lot of the Samoan and Polynesian culture. If you're in San Francisco, tell me you're home because how many of the family start work the territory there. If you're in Philadelphia, tell me you're home there because you went to high school in the Philadelphia suburbs at a point in your career in the Samoans, in Allentown and what have you. Yeah, Memphis is not home. You're not Flex Blues Cavana. Like, stop it.
It surprised me. It surprised me because were you going to go where everywhere that your dad went, where Rocky Johnson went? I'm in Portland, Oregon, because he worked for Don Owen. So you know what? I'm a home here in Portland. No, that's not how that works. It surprised me, but I think that the bottom line for me, Justin, is no matter how evil The Rock can be with Cody, he is still a babyface to many because of how he's perceived. Heels, don't smile and appreciate the adulation of the fans. Heels don't do that, but The Rock did it on Friday night on SmackDown in Memphis, Tennessee. He's a babyface with heel tendencies. So there's a shade of gray with this character that's not what I expected. If you're coming back, and I know in San Diego for that first Raw, he was a babyface and he enjoyed, again, the adulation of the crowd. People enjoyed him coming back. And that's when The Rock said, I'm going to attack. I want to go and be the head of the table taking my cousin Roman Reigns out of the picture. And now all of a sudden, the story started to evolve because more and more people wanted Cody to be in this spot as the Universal Champion. Then there was a shift. And that's okay. Creatively, you want to make a shift, that's fine. But you can't say, well, now I'm a heel with Paul Heyman and with Roman Reigns, and then come to Memphis and give you the old smile and the wink and shouting out the women and being a babyface. So next week, will you go back to being a heel? This is why this whole thing is murky. It's very compelling how The Rock was able to do that, because I could have swore a few hours before SmackDown, he had this scathing promo swearing, going after Cody and Roman and Cody's mother and everything else.
Well, that's the compelling but somewhat confusing thing, right? Because each week, the dialogue of what he's saying is getting more personal and more violent. He's talking about, beating Cody Rhodes to the point of blood dripping and soaking on a weight belt that he's then going to hand to Cody's mom. I mean, he is getting more personal by the week, which, again, that's great. That's great for, in theory, that's great for business. That's great for what is going to be for the payoff. But you're right to be doing that. And then also, putting on an Elvis concert, that's confusing. Now, I mean, I guess I will say with The Rock, obviously there's a huge asterisk with him. You know, I guess one could make the defense that he's just above any and all other professional wrestlers, to the point of where he gets just to be The Rock, which is a global star of screen, whether it be movies, professional wrestling, whatever. He's on your screen. He's on your device. And so he's just above that, and he just gets to be charismatic Rock, which that charisma, I guess, includes speaking and talking deadly with deadly threats, but also being comedic and charming. He's just at that level. He gets that pass. He was still doing the final boss stuff. Once again, makes a reference that he might make Seth's title disappear if Seth doesn't know his role. Again, I don't know what that means. What do you mean make the title disappear? What in the TKO bylaws? Where in your role can you make titles disappear? Tell me what you're talking about there.
See, what I've discovered throughout all this, and it took Memphis for this to click for me, Justin Labar, is that The Rock is the final boss and is a heel when it comes to Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. And he's a babyface everywhere else. And to me, I call me old school, I think that you have to be able to have a line of demarcation. You can't be in the middle. Okay? You just can't be just a little pregnant. You have to determine what you are in professional wrestling. And the idea that The Rock is smiling, swaying back and forth, which was an incredible segment, by the way. It was a lot of fun. But what I'm telling you is that I just think that a turn by The Rock on Roman Reigns is imminent. And I think it's going to happen in this calendar year. And this is why. It's because he gets really, really upset and goes after Cody Rhodes and goes after his mom and goes after Seth Rollins because it's the buildup of the match. But I just feel like there is a little schizo thing going on with Rock. And if that's what he's going through, I'd like to have that explored even more so. I'm a babyface over here, but over here, I'm the final boss and I got the weight belt and I want Cody Rhodes to bleed. So if that's his character where he just jogs back and forth between personalities, bring that out even more so if that's what's happening with him, because I see two rocks. I don't know about you. I see two rocks. I don't see one.
Yeah, I mean, you say that he's going to, you know, you think he's going to turn on Roman this calendar year. I think it's probably going to be, you know, in the, like, the next moon cycle he's turning on The Rock. So I can see that, like, maybe there is some motivation there of, like, all right, look, I'm getting, you know, obviously we all know everything we're seeing right now. We all know this is the result of an audible called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did not expect in the mid-March to be doing this, you know, when he came back. This is the audible call. So maybe part of him is like, look, you know, we know at WrestleMania, just after WrestleMania, whatever the timeline truly ends up being, he's going to go back to being the true babyface, and it's going to be him versus Roman in the story. Maybe he does kind of want to be a little schizo where he's walking the line. He's like, all right, well, I got to, you know, Cody and I have this issue and I got to sell it, but I don't want to go too far. I don't want to go too far to where I can't turn back around. The fans can't just, you know, you don't, maybe he doesn't want to go to a point of where, oh my God, now I look at The Rock totally different. And he's no longer my most electrifying man at sports entertainment that I can cheer. I don't know. I think that's a really good observation by your, not observation, but description of this analysis of this is kind of like a schizo. It does feel like there are two totally different rocks taking place. And it just depends on which platform at which time of day you tune in.
The guy that we see on social media, I wish that guy was 10 to 15 years younger, because that guy is dangerous. That's a different Rock than we've seen, only because the way he talks on social media, on his Twitter platform, is really dangerous. That's the way, a guy that's very dangerous. I mean, you see how he's built like a brick shithouse, so we already know that he's in shape. But imagine what he's saying. He comes across as someone that you don't want to F with. Not just the guy that's cracking jokes and all that. No, this guy here has a weight belt. He's talking about blood. That's something that you haven't heard in WWE in quite some time. Them actually using the word blood, or I'm going to make you bleed. That was a no-no under Vince. That, I mean, first of all, no blood policy, but even talking about blood? No. Not even. Yeah. That's why WWE's never had, you know, first blood matches, or they haven't had it in quite some time. So this guy I like, but then he goes to the other side, Justin. And he's the guy that wants to be liked. This is a topic that's been on Busted Open for a while now, about whether or not early on did The Rock want to be liked. Like, that, does he want to have that baby face, you know, adulation from the crowd? And I just think that I still think he wants that, but also he has to understand he has to do business, because his cousin needs help in this whole thing with Cody and Seth.
Well, how interesting is that, right? Because you're right. Like, you know, you he's a dangerous man on social with what he's saying, the way he's saying it. It's almost like, again, going back to your point of, like, you know, two different rocks. It's like you go to a social on Friday afternoon, you're getting, like, the director's cut of the movie. You're getting the longer length. You're getting all the curse words. You're getting a darker tone to what he's saying. And then you go to SmackDown, and you're getting the theater cut. It'll pared down a little bit more for time. No, you can't say that word. Mm-hmm. You know, like, that's what it feels like. It's two different ways. And what's interesting about that, Jay Hood, is that, if anything, you would think you'd want the more dangerous and more convincing heel to be on the pro wrestling show. And you would think that on his socials, which goes out to the entire world, which some of which are following him because they like his movies and they've never watched one match, you would think that would be the lighter side of The Rock. You know, so it's kind of reversed in terms of, I would think you do the better heel work on my wrestling show.
You would think. And all I know is that when I see him come out, his Titantron is the best Titantron, if they still call it that, in the WWE.
Yes.
I mean, that lightning coming down, that new logo of The Rock, that's a heel. Because if lightning's coming down, that means yes, he's the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. However, that Titantron and the way that music is slow, like that is a heel coming down the ramp, is it not? That's exactly who he is. But then he gives you the song in Memphis. He sways back and forth and makes people laugh. There is two rocks I'm watching right now, man, and maybe with the double personality, maybe that makes him even more dangerous. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe, maybe. But yeah, shout out real quick. You're right, though. I'm glad you got to it. The entrance is on beaten on par. We know WWE does. You know, they do good rehearsals. They have everybody's footsteps and motions down to both the talent and to the camera people. I mean, they know everybody's going to be that entrance with the lighting, the lightning bolt. They transitioned into the old Hollywood Rock, as you said, slower, more methodical, final boss feeling kind of swagger beat. That the entrance was very good. You're right. Very, very, very good. Yeah, maybe he is dangerous because we don't know he's Jekyll and Hyde right now. I don't know. But I stand by what we started with. I don't like how he gave Memphis a pass. That's not, we don't do that on the road to Mania. You're a heel in the main event. You do not give a city a pass, much less Memphis, your fourth home.
It is his fourth home. That's exactly right. As a heel, Justin Labar, I'll ask you because you would know this because you're a damn heel. Justin, do heels get goosebumps? Did it get goosebumps?
Maybe when you're drawing blood on your opponent, but I know that was another one. I was like, what's goosebump about this moment? What?
See, baby faces get goosebumps because they get the cheers from the crowd. Like, oh my God, I cannot believe this crowd is behind me. It's 100%. It's Ricky Morton, you know, reaching his hand out through the rope saying, please help me. You know, please help me. And he gets the crowd going. That's a goosebump moment. Do heels get goosebumps? Have you had goosebumps, Justin?
Never none that I would admit on the microphone. You know, I mean, candidly, I've had a few moments as a heel that I had like I was like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. You know, but I would none that the squirrely, annoying, loudmouth, white shoe wearing leather jacket with a verified check mark on the back of the leather jacket, Justin Labar, is ever going to be saying in the ring, I have goosebumps right now. No, I've never said a nice word about anybody that's been in any wrestling town that I've been in, whether it be Cleveland, Ohio, Pittsburgh, PA, Albany, Georgia. I've been mean all up and down the East.
See, that's why we tap into your expertise, because I can't remember a heel saying that I got goosebumps. Okay.
The Busted Open Podcast is now available on YouTube. This is Dave LaGreca, host of Busted Open, the number one pro wrestling show on the planet. You can now watch and listen to the award-winning Busted Open Podcast every single day on YouTube. Our best interviews, behind-the-scenes access, and some of our best content from the past, all available right now when you go to youtube.com/@BustedOpenPodcast. Subscribe right now.
Gunther is the Intercontinental Champion. He's had the championship for a long time. And so I remember seeing Walter in the Independence in the UK, and I just thought, wow, this guy is tremendous. Big guy that can move like a cruiserweight. Where have we heard that before, right, Justin? I mean, of course, a big guy that can move. So I watched him in some of those clips I saw on YouTube. I said, boy, Walter, he's amazing. He comes to NXT UK, and even more amazing because one of the great matches that I've seen over the last 10 years was him against Dragunov during the pandemic. It's like, what the fuck? Like, it was amazing, that match. If you have not seen that, I'm sure that's on Peacock, NXT UK, Ilya Dragunov against Walter. You got to see that. But him as Intercontinental Champion, I've really enjoyed the run because it's different, Justin. Like, wrestling, as you well know, doesn't have to be all the same. Same body, same promo type. It doesn't have to be the same. Gunther comes across completely different, and his gimmick is that the ring is sacred. He is a professional wrestler, not a sports entertainer. And so this works for me, and I've loved the reign so far.
I guess it's my early confession of the day here. In terms of male talent in WWE, he's probably who I look forward to seeing the most each week. He's the one who... I'll take a promo from him, but I really want to be able to hear a promo and see him in the ring. His growth that we've watched, you mentioned, you know, when he came to NXT, obviously he's always been good in the ring. The ring wasn't anything that he needed to get better at, so to speak, but it was, you know, defining the character. If you watch some of the early NXT, you can see him, his eyes are darting around as he's getting instruction from a cameraman or stage manager. Of, okay, we're throwing a replay. Okay, we're back from replay. Okay, now it's time to pose. All the different things. Like, he was still getting used to all those cues, all the TV cues that comes with being a WWE superstar. He's got all that down now. He's got the promo down. He owns Gunther. He owns that role. He owns, you said, he owns the Ring of Sacred. He owns leading the charge of Imperium. He now owns the history of the Intercontinental title. This has been a fantastic run to the point of, Jay Hood, I don't want to see it end. I don't want to see it end.
I can't see someone else winning the Intercontinental Championship. Because it's not one of those things where I'm so tired of Gunther being the Intercontinental champ. No. I mean, his matches against Sami Zayn, his matches against Chad Gable, his matches against Ricochet and Shinsuke Nakamura and Bronson Reed. It goes on out, Drew McIntyre. These have been really great matches that we have seen from Gunther, because he's not going to give you a five-minute match. What he's going to give you is 15 minutes of quality where he takes a lot of punishment and gives a lot of punishment. The best chop in the business right now belongs to Gunther. And I know everyone does it. I know everyone has it. Everyone wants to do the Ric Flair chop, you know, from the indies all the way up. But the point is, though, nothing has more impact than what Gunther does with that chop. I mean, you wait for it. You can't wait to hear it. And then on top of that, the when he is pinning someone, when the finish is coming, it kind of comes out of nowhere sometimes, Justin. It's not like, here is out of 10 moves, here's 8, 9, 10. When he gets to 10, that'll be the end. Not necessarily, because sometimes it's an explosion that comes out of nowhere where he's in peril, he's in trouble, finds a way to be able to pin his opponent out of nowhere. And I think that that also is something that's unique about him.
It's an excellent point by you, and it makes his matches stand out. And yes, they obviously have producers. they have a former wrestler that's assigned to each match to help the participants out. But he's been doing this for years, and he has a different, you know, he doesn't have the same producer for every match. So I have to give a lot of the credit that's a him thing. That's a him putting that touch on his match and his fight to stand out. His title run has become so successful that it poses a great risk. I'm going to make a comparison, and just hang on with me, both you and the nation. Just hang on for a second with me. It's not all that much different from The Undertaker's WrestleMania streak. What I mean by that is, it is something that has been built up for so long. It is like an inheritance. That whenever you have somebody break the streak and or somebody take the title off of Gunther, they are inheriting this great bit of equity and value. Okay? Now, for that person that inherits that, they have to hit. They have to now be a future Hall of Famer. And if they don't, their own undoing or just the way the chips fall, injuries, what have you, you squandered that streak, or in this case, that title run. You know, with The Undertaker, Jay Hood, I said this for years before Brock beat him at Mania 30, and I still hold this down now. For years, there were different talks of maybe Vladimir Kozlov. We have this new big guy, you play a Russian, maybe he's a Ted DiBiase Jr. Oh, and Ted, you know, was a manager. Like, these are all people, if you recall, that through the grapevine, at one point or another, when they were coming up, that they were discussed as possible beat taker at Mania. And I always said, if any young guy does it, you have now have to, that is an incredible amount of pressure to put on them, and they have to now have Hall of Fame careers. So I was fine when Brock, I was shocked like everybody else. I was in New Orleans like everybody else with the wide eyes. I was shocked. But when I let it think, you know, digest, I wasn't mad that they chose it for it to be Brock. Because Brock at that point in April 2014, he already was a Hall of Famer in both WWE, he's a surefire Hall of Famer in WWE and the UFC. So it's like, you know what? Brock beating it, at least we know we're not going to have the streak broken by somebody who's going to be, you know, ultimately looked at as some ham and egg that didn't pan out. So I say that with Gunther. You have this incredible IC title run. Who are you going to hand that pressure off to?
That's a great question. It's a great question, because look at the amount of contenders. And by the way, this is not like these are way less than in the WWE, the wrestlers that Gunther has faced. But think about, how dominant Gunther is and think about if that's the matchup, if it is indeed Sami Zayn against Gunther. People love Sami Zayn. He's a babyface. But think about the dominance of Gunther. What would you rather have? Would you rather have Sami Zayn as the Intercontinental Champion, as a workhorse champion, or Gunther, who's in great shape, who a guy will give you everything he has in the ring? And by the way, think about those matches. It's not like every match is outside interference. This is Gunther to himself, by the way. Right. More times than not, you're not seeing the other two on the outside, you know, pulling a leg or trying to help Gunther win. This is not a chicken shit, you know, heel that's just getting by, skating by these matches. He's dominating. Okay, I mean, it's 50-50, but then toward the end, like, Gunther is dominating and dominating to a victory. So as much as I love the Chad Gable story, and I think that Chad Gable is deserving of being a singles champion at some point, is this really the time? I thought that his match against Sami Zayn, Chad Gable, was fantastic. But you think about those guys. You may like them, but do you love them as Intercontinental Champion as much as Gunther? Okay, will they be as dominant? Think about this. In the history of the Intercontinental Championship, I always thought that either Randy Savage or Tito Santana were the best in my generation. Savage obviously did so much with that championship because when Hogan is on the A show, here's Savage on the B show, and it's a sellout because it's Savage. Because you just know for 30 minutes, he's going to give you his all. Same thing with Santana. Those matches against Greg the Hammer Valentine, classic matches. Santana had the championship for 443 days. White meat babyface, put him on a B show, good crowd. People respect Tito because he was a great technical wrestler. Honky Tonk Man, 454 days as champion. I mean, people hated Honky Tonk, so they kept the title on him. Fantastic. Razor Ramon, Greg Valentine, Mr. Perfect, Jericho. But there's nothing like Gunther, man. We haven't seen anything like it. JBL said it on a broadcast one day. He said, you know, when I look at Gunther, he reminds me of a young Andre. I know the Andre that we see is a, you know, plodding, slow, older Andre. I saw on X, on Twitter, not too long ago, someone showing, like, a young Andre from France. And he looked like Gunther as far as the size. He wasn't 400 pounds yet. He was like 300, but stacked.
Have you seen that clip? Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I mean, that, and I said, oh my God, that's Gunther. And the same way, Gunther dropped weight, added muscle, and he's even more of a powerhouse. And he did kind of remind me of that old Andre clip.
There's parts of old Andre that reminds me of. There's parts of Killer Kowalski that remind me of, which I find very fitting because that was who trained Triple H, and we know Triple H has obviously been a big fan of Gunther. Mm-hmm. Back to my logic, I almost wonder, are you better off whenever? And it doesn't have to be at WrestleMania. And I'm sorry to Sami Zayn and his fans. I don't want it to be Sami Zayn. But whenever he drops that IC title, I almost wonder, are you better off going with somebody like a Randy Orton, somebody who Randy's only been IC champion one time in his career. But look, Gunther has done all that he can do for the IC title not to be considered the mid-card number two title. I mean, he has really, and he's trying to keep that title so elevated all the while Roman Reigns is making a historic run with that world title. But I just wonder, somebody like a Randy Orton, I mean, God, the match would be incredible between Randy and Gunther. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if Randy was the one who beat Gunther, you know that you did not just have that title get dropped to somebody who, again, as I said, is going to fall. You got Randy Orton, surefire Hall of Famer, has done all he's done. And it makes Gunther seem that much bigger that, oh, it took Randy frickin' Orton to beat him. You know, so, I mean, looking at it, who else? I mean, you know, I think Gable would have been better to be in the spot. I thought they had it. I thought they had maybe the right situation back in the fall when they had Gable main event against Gunther. And Gable's daughter was there. That kind of felt like everything was there. And the crowd was behind Gable. I thought, okay, maybe this is it.
In Minnesota.
And they didn't. I was like, all right, well, that train's passed. You know, you're just looking around. I mean, you know, looking at guys who, like, the crowd is you know, I mean, the crowd's really behind LA Knight. You know, obviously he's working AJ for Mania, but again, I'm looking past Mania. Yeah, I'm trying to think of guys who are just solid over with the fans that makes sense. And oh, by the way, it feels like especially when you watch Gunther versus Dom a few weeks ago, the fans are starting to cheer Gunther in those situations. So is Gunther going to be like my Rhea? Is he going to start to like come all the way around to where he starts to swing around to where people just start to cheer him, kind of like they do Brock in some chapters of Brock's life where we're like, God, this guy's so dominant, he's such a physical specimen, you just kind of cheer him because you're in awe.
So, Sumu, you get to a point now when you think about this Intercontinental Championship, you make these champions so dominant, it becomes a shoot. Like, it's like they're so dominant that if they do lose, it's almost a disappointment. It's always like this with the heel, right? You want the babyface to finally win the championship, and then when the babyface does win, it's like, And for some, the air is out of the balloon. It's an interesting time, I think. What do you think?
I've been thinking about this scenario for a little bit, honestly, just because it is a huge question of what do you do with the Intercontinental Championship? Because what's the next big goal for Gunther after making this title? As big as he has, it's making the world title mean just as much. Like, whenever he has, that's his next goal. And if you're going to give the Intercontinental title to where, you know, Gunther has built it up to what it is now, you have to make it important. And it feels like they had that chance with Gable, and now that chance, I feel, is gone now. But I do feel that there's one person that I think can really make a story out of making a title, beating Gunther for the Intercontinental title, important. And it's someone from his past, someone in NXT who could definitely make the leap into the main roster sooner rather than later. Who am I talking about? I'm talking about Ilya Dragunov. Mm-hmm. Somebody who really is etched into Gunther's past, all the way back to their days in Europe. And those guys, we know, can provide a classic of a match. Now the next part that will make whoever takes that title away from Gunther is the story. It has to be a massive story involved. And I think that you setting up that scenario with having Dragunov's history with Gunther and bringing that into the main roster whenever Ilya makes that jump to the main roster, it's there. And I think Ilya Dragunov is the only person in WWE who could beat Gunther and make that title change mean something.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And again, going back to that NXT UK matchup that they had during the pandemic, if no one saw that match, Justin, now it becomes a fresh match to WWE fans. Because I saw it, and I just thought it was one of the top matches I've ever seen. And again, no crowd there, but the guys were just beating the hell out of each other. And both love the punishment. They love the physicality, that European style. And I just think that out of all the IC champions I've seen over the years, man, this guy here, he is an embodiment of what the championship is, and that is the workhorse champion, right? So in the Hogan days, all right, Hogan, do your jazz hands for 15 minutes, drop the leg, 1, 2, 3. But the guy underneath, 30 minutes, 45 minutes, 60 minutes for the Intercontinental Championship. The workhorse champion, the real wrestling, if you could call it that, the real wrestling and the real work came from the Intercontinental Champion. And that's what Gunther's doing.
That's exactly what he's doing. Yeah, it's, you know, again, it needs to keep going. I hope, and I don't think it will, because, look, I mean, we know from what we're hearing, Gunther's entire Mania situation got flip sideways with Brock not being around right now. So I don't think that there's a plan to have him drop this title at Mania. I know Mania is a big stage, and that's, you know, you want to do it in front of big eyes, but I don't think it's happening. If they're going to do Dragunov, that would be very interesting. You're right, it would be a fresh matchup for people that didn't see it. And, you know, two international guys, you got a lot of international PLEs this year. So maybe take advantage of that.
Talk is Jericho podcast with multiple world champion professional wrestler, lead singer of Fozzy, and New York Times best-selling author, Chris Jericho, is now on Fight Nation. Don't miss Jericho interviews some of the biggest names in wrestling, entertainment, and comedy. Plus, give all of his takes on what's going on in the world of pop culture. Catch the Talk is Jericho podcast every Tuesday and Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern on your home for combat sports, SiriusXM Fight Nation, Channel 156.
Justin LaBar, what happened in pro wrestling on this day?
We're talking March 17th, and probably the biggest thing that would happen in the history as we look at memorable moments and events would be WrestleMania 18. In 2002, WrestleMania 18, and J-Hood, you can't talk about WrestleMania 18 and not talk about the iconic first-time-ever meeting of The Rock versus Hulk Hogan. I mean, this was history right here. I mean, these two guys talk about not having to do much of anything, just looking at each other and the energy of the crowd. And of course, as you remember, Hogan went into this as Hollywood Hogan, as part of the NWO that had just came into WWE, and they called the audible. He ended up becoming a babyface in the matchup, but the next night, he's out of the NWO. He's back to being red and yellow.
One of the few times you see a double turn where you're listening to the crowd, people in Toronto, they love Hogan over the years, and Hogan is a babyface and Rock becomes a heel. They are able to do that. That's what two professionals can do. Listen to the crowd, and we're going to take it from here. One of the big high spots for me is Hogan, for many years in Toronto, was able to drop that leg. He dropped it on Rock, and then Rock kicked out at a definitive two, by the way, not just the shoulder, definitive two. And it's just like, and I remember Jim Ross saying, he beat Andre the Giant with that move. Yeah,
yeah.
But didn't beat The Rock with that move. Just one of the all-time classic great matches that we'll ever see at WrestleMania, let alone professional wrestling.
I once asked Jerry Lawler, I said, you know, in the color commentator spot, yeah, do you have a favorite match? Is one that sticks out? And he says, it's probably this one. He said, just because, you know, and I think that's a huge compliment. Jerry Lawler sat and watched so many matches, and for this one to be the one that he says, boy, I feel bad for Triple H and Chris Jericho, who are in the main event, who had to follow this.
That's right. What else happened on this day in pro wrestling?
Well, AEW, you know, it's only been around for so many years, but AEW on this day in 2021, our own Thunder Rosa and Dr. Britt Baker had their famous Lights Out match, maybe one of the greatest matches in AEW history. Fantastic piece of work by both ladies. That was that memorable. I definitely one of the best AEW matches, you know.
No question. If you're going to make a top 10 of great matches, that for sure, that's in that top 10. The hope is that Britt Baker can get healed, and so we can see that match in the ring again. Personal issues draw money. I'd like to see those two back in the ring again.
Absolutely. Agree completely. And finally, on this day, March 17th in 2000, the documentary Beyond the Mat gets released. And this was, Jay Hood, this documentary was unprecedented access given by WWE to an independent production. Of course, WWE's had their own, you know, documentaries and things, but to an independent production that they're not profiting off of. I mean, Vince had them in his office. They were heavily backstage at Rumble 99. This was a big deal for the pro. This not only got, we saw behind the scenes at WWE and talent getting tryouts, Mick Foley and his family. We saw this was the first of the darkness of really what Jake the Snake Roberts' personal life looked like. We saw ECW behind the scenes, their first pay-per-view. So this really, for 2000, before there was the internet, before there was really pulling the curtain back to the extent it is now, Beyond the Mat, huge deal.
Busted Open is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcast. Catch the full 3 hours of Busted Open every day of the week at 9 a.m. Eastern on SiriusXM Foundation, channel 156. Go to SiriusXM.com/BustedOpenTrial to start your free trial today.